I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Puma Podcast.
The Chinese have been so aggressive in the South China Sea, you know, using water cannons and lasers on Filipino patrol boats, Filipino fishing boats. And I think that aggressiveness and the concern as to how they might react against others is really what pulled the dynamics for this Japanese-Filipino-American summit.
A trilateral summit between the U.S., Japan, and the Philippines was held in the White House this April 2024. The high-level meeting was the first of its kind and marked the beginning of closer cooperation between the three countries on a long list of pressing issues.
So it's historical in the sense that this is the first time for the leaders of the three countries to meet in Washington, D.C. We know that these leaders also have their own share of challenges, like President Biden will stand up for elections in November. The popularity and approval ratings of both Prime Minister Fumio Kishida and President Marcos are also going down. And of course, the foreign policy is seen as, you know, like a good optics. Maybe in some way it will help boost their image. And of course, there's a lot of things going on in the region. And geopolitically, flashpoints like the South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait.
But as elections loom in the U.S., and as our servicemen and fisherfolk pay the price for China's belligerence, it's worth asking, how much hope can we really pin on this alliance? In this episode, two analysts weigh in. I'm Bella Perez Rubio, Puma Podcast, and you're listening to Teka Teka News. Before we get started, a quick rundown of what was said at this summit.
A great deal of history in our world will be written in the Indo-Pacific over the coming years. And as the three allies, three steadfast partners, and three proud democracies representing 500 million people, today we commit to writing that story in the future together.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden.
And I want to be clear. The United States defense commitments to Japan and to the Philippines are ironclad. As I've said before, any attack on Philippine aircraft, vessels, or armed forces in the South China Sea would invoke our mutual defense treaty.
This is a meeting that looks ahead.
President Marcos.
As we deepen our ties and enhance our coordination, we seek to identify ways of growing our economies and making them more resilient, climate-proofing our cities and our societies, sustaining our development progress, and forging a peaceful world for the next generation.
Here's Prime Minister Kishida.
In the midst of compound crisis faced by the global community, multi-layered cooperation between allies and like-minded countries is essential if we are to maintain and bolster a free and open international order based on the rule of law. Today's meeting will make history as an occasion that significantly pushed forward such initiative. Japan, the U.S., and the Philippines are maritime nations connected by the Pacific Ocean and our natural partners.
And coming out of it was a very strong statement on, you know, abeyance of the rules of law, international order, and a condemnation of aggressive actions by the Chinese in the South China Sea. But there were also a couple of pieces of which could have some great benefits for all three countries, but probably most significantly for the Filipinos, who are the less developed country of the three and the country that feels the most aggression.
That's former senior U.S. diplomat Christy Kenny, the voice you heard at the top of this episode. Throughout her career, she served as an ambassador to Ecuador, Thailand, and the Philippines. She shared her views on the historic trilateral summit and partnership with the Woodrow Wilson Center, a think tank based in Washington, D.C.
And so one of those agreements was to continue training for the Filipino Coast Guard, capacity building. The Japanese have now donated 12, I think, patrol boats to the Filipinos for their Coast Guard. Remember, the Philippines is a nation of 7,000 islands. So a Coast Guard is really kind of got to be top of their agenda. Whether you're talking Chinese aggression or unregulated fishing, search and rescue. And so coming out of this was an agreement to do more trilateral training, very specifically to put Japanese and Filipinos on a U.S. Coast Guard vessel in the near future. And finally, out of this, the United States has a long agreement with the Philippines on our visiting forces agreement, which governs when we put ships into port, if we do exercises in the Philippines, in Philippine territory. The Japanese are now negotiating and expect to soon sign a similar agreement with the Filipinos, which will allow the Japanese self-defense forces to similarly use ports in the Philippines, again, enhancing that cooperation, enhancing the capacity of the Filipinos, and serving as a force multiplier for all three of our countries.
The new alliance, however, isn't just hinged on security. More on that after a quick break. Hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to Teka Teka News. We're so glad that you do, and we'd love to get to know you better. Our team is hosting a small gathering on May 2 from 6 to 9 p.m. in Makati. If you're free to join us, check out bit.ly/tekadinner for more details. See you there!
The backdrop is the tensions in the South China Sea, the concern about potential economic repercussions of strained relations with the country's largest trade partner, China.
That's Lucio Blanco Pito III. He's a research fellow at the Asia-Pacific Pathways to Progress Foundation.
And so the agenda was both security and economics. They announced the Luzon Economic Corridor. They talk about partnerships for technologies, investments, and trade. And so I think overall, the summit tried to meet the expectations, especially from the Philippine side, that security defense-wise is one, but economic is very much a concern of the country.
But what exactly is the Luzon Economic Corridor meant to be?
So it's not only physically connecting Subic and Batangas, you know, two ports and two economic hubs north and south of Manila, but also coordinating high-impact investments along the route. So infrastructure, renewable energy, clean energy, semiconductor supply chains, and agribusiness. And these are the things that the country needs. And as relations between the Philippines and China, the country's largest trade partner, worsen because of the way the management of the issue of the South China Sea is going, then tourism is down. So far, agricultural trade is not yet that affected, but investments from China, infrastructure projects from China are down already. So I think this is a way for the Philippines to try to offset some of the lost economic opportunities from China. And so I think they send this very strong signal that U.S. And Japan are able partners of the country and can step up in terms of addressing economic concerns of the country.
How secure do you feel in the agreements and, you know, all the mechanisms announced during the summit? Do you feel that there really is a path for us to disentangle ourselves economically from China a little bit and move closer to the U.S., to Japan, to Western countries? Or does it feel more symbolic? And I'm asking that because it's hard to parse what policy announcements are just symbolic and which policy announcements actually show promise and follow through.
I agree. Good point. No? So because sometimes there's a disconnect between what the government tries to say, you know, in terms of policy and whether they are able to persuade the corporate, I mean, the private sector to follow through. And so sometimes, you know, the private sector, because their motivation is really, you know, markets, access for capital and places for to invest. So, of course, China is a big market. China is a place to invest. And so sometimes it's very difficult for them to disentangle themselves from such a huge lucrative market. So states, you know, governments trying to encourage their companies to move out, diversify away from the mainland, avoid over-concentrating their investments in a big market like China because of potential risks consequent to that move. So far, many companies, you know, are still attached, very much deeply embedded with China. And so there's that valid concern as to whether the Philippines' efforts to try to expand economic relations with the U.S. and Japan can compensate for lost economic opportunities from China, the country's largest trade partner and a major investor and a major partner for infrastructure projects.
Here's former Ambassador Kenny.
I think what I find encouraging about this trilateral, and I'll get to the bigger Asia picture, is that there's a role for those who are not in government. So the role, for example, on the business side of this trilateral summit to invest, to build ports, to build railroads, to enhance a workforce in the Philippines that can do semiconductor work, to build clean energy and share our expertise. It may be under a government steering group, but that's going to be driven by the private sector. And they tend to be far less buffeted, I think, by the global crisis of the day.
But as analyst Lucio Pitlo III mentioned at the top of this episode, political headwinds are already looming over this new promising alliance.
That is a concern. I think that is a risk shared by some as to whether there will be a policy continuity. We know President Biden is up against former President Trump. And we know a lot of people have expressed a bit disturbed or alarmed about the potential second Trump administration, knowing his conduct of foreign policy. Some describe it as transactional, less values-based, and America first, very nativist, going towards naked interests without little regard for allies and partners. And there are also concerns about whether Trump will also compel allies to spend more on defense, maybe procure more arms from the U.S., and also open up their markets to U.S. exports without reciprocity. And so I think there are some concerns about whether U.S. will have the means to compete with China economically and whether the policy of the Biden administration, the Indo-Pacific strategy, the way it is being laid out under the Biden administration will be sustained if ever Biden will not be reelected by November.
So I had to ask, how much hope should we pin on this new trilateral partnership? How viable does it seem to you? How well do you think it will sustain political changes that are outside of our control? And what can we reasonably expect now that all these promises have been made and symbolic gestures have been presented to us?
There's this word called Trump-proofing. This is being done in Ukraine already, like trying to institutionalize the provision of arms and supplies to Ukraine, just to make sure that even if President Trump gets back in the White House, it will not be very easy for him to withdraw U.S. military logistical support to Ukraine to enable the country to keep on fighting Russian assault. And I think that kind of wisdom, that kind of thinking is also not lost among Asia-Pacific or Indo-Pacific allies. And so by this trilateral summit, this very high-profile event is a way for the Philippines probably to sustain the attention of both U.S. electorate, U.S. public, U.S. policymakers, and also that of Japan, to make sure that the commitment that were given by, you know, the current leaders of these two countries in this meeting will be sustained. Because if U.S. walked away from it, then the image, the reputation, the credibility of the U.S. as an actor that keeps its commitment, keeps its word, that its words will be honored regardless of, you know, domestic intramuros, you know, domestic political changes. So I think the trilateral summit can also be a way, you know, a high-profile event to try to keep U.S. and Japan, two important partners for the Philippines, invested in the security and stability of the region and of the Philippines. So it is a way to send a message to the leaders contending for the highest post in the U.S., that this South China Sea issue is there, and that attention to this flashpoint and support for allies should continue, regardless of who sits in the White House next. At the same time, for Japan, a message being sent by the Philippines that if in the event the next U.S. leadership decides to diminish, to downgrade its profile or its role in the region, maybe cut deals with China or have lesser attention paid to flashpoints like the South China Sea, then Japan can, working alongside with other countries, European actors or Australia or India or Korea, they may in a way still be able to hold the line and counter or push back against China's actions in the South China Sea.
And that was today's episode of Teka Teka News. Again, I'm Bella Perez Rubio. Pidoy Blanco edited this episode. Our executive producer is Jill Caro, and our senior news editor is Veronica Uy. If you found this episode useful, share it with a friend or two, and thanks for listening.